This is Rabbi, was it?
Moshe Barkani.
Moshe Barkani. And we'll talk about his remembrances of the Yeshiva Zatzal. Where were you before you came to Yeshiva here?
How far back do you want to go?
As far as you want.
Oh, you tell me.
High school.
High school, RJJ.
RJJ. Who was your Rebbe?
I had four Rebbes.
Who was the Rebbe at the last?
Nevinensky.
Who?
Rabbi Yosef Nevinensky.
He was a Talmud, Rabban?
He was a Talmud, Rabban, I'm not sure.
Because well, there was somebody there who was.
The metal clavicle was a big time, but it is.
Yeah, was he a Rebbe?
No, I never got that.
So that was, what approximately, what year was that?
I graduated in 1957.
1950s high school.
Yep.
And where'd you go from there?
Philadelphia for 1 year.
Philadelphia, okay. Who was your rebel there?
Shmuel
Kamenetsky.
Yeah. Then I went back to New York.
Tavada. Who'd you have there?
I had Zelig Epstein for 2 years.
Who?
Zelig Epstein for 2 years.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? Then 1 year by Rev Chazan.
Was Chazan? Yeah.
And the last year
was Rabbi Yankov.
Rabbi
Kamenetsky.
Right.
Very good. So then, at that point, when did you intend to come to Lakewood?
When I finished my 4 years right out, I went to the Smicha program. I didn't quite finish it because I wanted to get to Lakewood. I finished my Smicha program in Lakewood privately, and I got Smicha, I'm sure, a couple of years later.
Why was there such a drive to come to Lakewood?
I developed a lot of Havarim in Philadelphia, went to Lakewood, and went to Philadelphia,
so what was your first introduction in Lakewood? How'd you came here?
I came to Lakewood my first time in 1957.
Okay, so what was the experience of coming here like? What was the initiation, so to speak?
No initiation. I knew a lot of people there, so I had a
lot. Did you have a fahar?
I never got. No, I can't tell you when I was supposed to. No, I didn't come into Talmud in 1957. I came to visit.
Okay. So what about when you came to become part of the
Yeshiva? I came Elzman before of 1962 to come to Lakewood, and I met the Baron. He knew who I was. I had made frequent visits to the Yeshiva before.
And what were the experiences in doing those visits?
It's too long a story. What happened was, this is not a gift.
Okay.
I don't want to include any thing. I had a mitzvah that I had gone to learn by Meir Mintz, the friend of Bracha,
yeah.
Yeah, high school. And his thing had disbanded at the end of summer 1957.
Huh.
So two of his Talmidim entered Lakewood proper, and a couple of others went to Philadelphia, and they were trying to get me to come to join Philadelphia.
Who were those Talmidim that you knew?
Of who?
I mean, who were the Talmidim that you knew at the time?
In Lakewood, I knew those Nussbaum, and Moshe Hirsch, all the RJJ guys.
Yeah. Okay, then.
I have enemies who today are Rosh Yeshivas.
Right here. Okay, now, then what happened?
And that didn't work out, so I ended up going to Philadelphia in 57. Then I went to, for that was a year, and I had to come back to New York, and I went to learn in Tel Aviv.
You're right.
Yeah, half from short of Chunavacha. And then I stood there 4 years, and then I decided that I wasn't going to stay in New York anymore. I wanted to go to Lakewood. I'm sure I tried again to go to my base in Australia, but it wasn't for me. So I went to, this one, and I had all my friends, I had made some very close friends in Philadelphia, who became lifelong friends.
Who were they?
Alexander Kleinbaum, Zangzun, Jacob Lanzmann.
Right. Yeah, they were my classmates.
After that?
Yeah.
Heshi Bosch.
Yeah, right. All of them.
Let's see, who else is there in my time? Jakob Fensterheim.
Yeah, right. Shimon Eider was in YU.
Dov Lesser.
Right. So that's the normal, the regular chevra.
These are the stars.
I know, but I'm saying in Lakewood, that's like the standard.
That's right.
Standard people. Standards.
Yeah.
So okay. Then.
And so these are the people that were sort of, you know, I kept contact with.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name? Mr. Shimon Sturman.
Who?
Shimon Sturman, who was Rebbe in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you're right. Right.
So from RJJ.
Right. He's not living, is he?
He missed a few years.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was the Lakewood experience like?
Fantastic. I met him in Home Alone. I met him there. He knew who I was. I had made many visits to Lakewood in those 4 years.
Right.
And he met me, and he says, "Oh, your face is familiar to me." And mm-hmm. So I reminded him who I was.
Yeah.
And I said, "I would like to take off hair for St. John's." He was okay. You're welcome to come, but and we'll get to you. And then, of course, I think I saw the last time that I was to be admitted to Lakewood.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was when he got sick and he was missed.
So, during that time, what impressions did you get from Abraham himself, of things that happened?
Nothing. I just heard a couple of shurim, a couple of shmuzim, but I didn't have such a day-to-day contact.
Could you describe what it was like by the shurim compared to other things?
My impression is no different than any of the other people's impression of those things. It's the question,
I want to hear it repeated.
I have nothing to say that my memories are too old and too dated, and therefore I can't really give you a clear. No, that's the truth. I mean, I just don't have I don't know what was memory and what I read. You know, the fire and the. I heard all the shurim from Schneer afterwards for 5 years. So that it really doesn't, I can't say this.
There are no incidents that you remember. Okay. We try.
I have nothing to put with the Bible, for sure. Just the fact that, the other thing I can tell about the Bible is trying to think.
What?
I'm trying to think.
There must be things that you tell over, no?
No, because I didn't have that much daily. I had very little daily, very little personal thing. The other thing was that he was. It's interesting. I was in the hospital when he was sick for a couple of
days. Yeah, what was that like?
I was there on Shabbos. He was.
This is when he's sick before the Pateer.
Before the operation.
Uh-huh.
After the operation, I didn't see him anymore. I wasn't. They only had people who had been Tamim for a long time. So I was already not out of a new Tamim, so I didn't. Right.
Who were those?
Had he lived a few more weeks, I probably would have ended up getting into the rotation because they were, they're 24 hours.
Who were the Talmidim that were very close at that time?
Moshe Heinemann, Rav Hirschman, were the two who lived in the most. Landesman was there quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think the older ones were the ones that would be the Eisenbergs. Not that they had the stomach for either. I mean, Moshe Heinemann was very good at, very practical person, very down to earth. Heinemann, Hirschman, were the two there's two Bochrim also, in the lights.
Yeah.
It's a little harder to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't involved there. Being a new Talmud, I didn't have much to do with the taking care of the Shiva. People who had been longer, who were up Schneider and the Redditon were more comfortable with being involved. I guess older Talmud, people like Fagelstock or Chaim Epstein, of course, they were very much involved. With taking care of the issues, trying to work out, especially after we had the operation.
Because
I don't really have anything like to offer in terms of personal recollections of.
What about impressions that you remain with?
Much more. What?
How about your personal impressions?
Of what?
Of Rabban. The overall impressions that you left with.
I don't have an impression that's particular, because I don't have. I didn't have that much of a connection to him that's been jumping out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No observations. How obvious.
I'd never really saw him except on the rare occasions out there as a guest. And in terms of, you know, how he acted in Shiva, I just know that there was, what everybody else saw, so there was no, I have nothing to offer you that'll enable you to get, you know, a different aspect. You can say, oh, I'm finding something that nobody else saw.
I really would be interested in things that you think I heard already.
No, I don't have anything to offer. I was not with him long enough to develop any kind of a personal relationship with him at all. Uh-huh. I came in the middle of the Elder's mind, didn't come to the very beginning. And the things that we spoke to each other, will probably be less than 100 words. But you know, you couldn't, I couldn't talk to him alone. It certainly wasn't going to waste his time discussing the weather.
Right.
So, you know, and when the one time that there was a discussion was about me with him, but it was people in the yeshiva trying to work out a way to get me into the yeshiva when I wasn't ready for it. So this is back in the in 1957 when.
Uh-huh. That's before you went to Tavadat, back
right,
to Tavadat.
Right. Uh-huh. Philadelphia.
Uh-huh, right.
So that at that point, but that was the object of discussion, of a lengthy discussion, to see if, you know, to get me charusas, if charusas I'll be able to get. I was very young. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even at the right age for this year. Like, it was just so many different things that didn't, didn't stem.
Uh-huh. So, of course, I have impressions of people who were here for one day and they gave me a whole impression.
The atmosphere, of course, was in yeshiva was a very powerful one. The experience of the intensity of the davening, the level of the learning, the level of the madrega of the leaders of the people there. I mean, they're all Roshivas. These are people that are today all Roshivas because they came there with tremendous mysterious nefesh and with the willingness to forego all kinds of futures and benefits they could do. Yeah. And had the brains to do, and they just willing to give up all that for the opportunity to learn Torah Shema and to become the Gedolei Yisrael.
That's important. That's
what makes life a little like it is. That's not by Kani's viewpoint. That's what everyone knows.
It's not. What I'm saying is, even though it's everybody's, it's yours too.
Okay.
And that's important.
I know it's important. I think it's important.
I mean, for me, it's important. For what I'm doing. Because I said, this is not one observation. This is thousands of observations.
Okay.
So that strengthens the picture.
What years were you? When did you learn your language?
No, I didn't learn it at all.
What's the Shaykh to Dershowitz?
Dershowitz was a classmate of mine from Tavadas on.
What does on mean? He was Philadelphia and I was in Philadelphia.
No, I wasn't in Philadelphia.
No, but he was.
I was in Tavadas. And then I went to YU, and then he was in YU.
You left Tavadas before I came there?
I left Tavadas in 50... I'm not sure, 58.
But you went to the base manager, okay, that's why I came to the base manager straight now.
Right. So I went to 50, I went to YU. And that's.
Well, you know, it's the Met Human Eye, probably.
I know him, yeah, I know him more, yeah, sure.
And Mel Press?
Press, yeah, well, he was like he was very, he got the highest mark on the Regents or something, if you remember that.
No, I never was in YU. I just know.
Yeah.
He was a friend of him and Shem and I were friends.
They're older than me.
Right.
They're older than me. One year older.
Shem and I is my age.
Yeah. I figured that. So he's that's
Mike Grosso.
Who?
Jim and I are roommates in Lakewood.
That's
he might be older than me. I'm not quite sure anymore.
Yeah.
You remember what year he graduated from NYU?
Who, me or him?
No, him.
He must have graduated in 61.
He's a year older than me. Okay.
That's what I figured. Okay. That's.
Anything else?
I have nothing except what you told me.
What about Rishner? What do you want to know?
No, I'm not into Rishner. I'm only the Baron.
Well, I can tell you, I just heard a tape from Amos Bunim.
Yeah.
And he speaks about how solo work that the Baron did. I think it's probably in his book, more about his father.
Yeah.
Because it sounds familiar. Well, no, they went to see Morgan Stanley, and Morgan, they had an offer to ransom a couple hundred thousand Jews. They needed $1.2 million of 1944 dollars, which is like, I don't know, $100 million today, probably.
Uh-huh.
And they were only able to raise $250,000, they need another million.
Uh-huh.
They came so they were able to convince the joint to give the missing million.
Mm-hmm.
So Baron was, what he called, told them, you know, you guys are a bunch of no good mix. Baron Clare, you know, they got Bunim to put pressure on them, but they said we can't do it because we have to have a license from the government of the United States to put money for an enemy party. So they said we'll give them the money, but we can't do it illegally.
Right.
So they went to how to get the government. They went to the treasury. The only Jew in the government was Morgenstern. He was suspected of the treasury, so he had the authority to do it.
Right.
So they went to him, and so first they went to. So he said, "I can't do it. But I'm the only Jew here. You know, it was like a whatever."
Yeah, right.
So, Baron told them, "Your position is worthless. You're worthless, and the whole thing is worthless. You're not willing to stick your neck out to save Jews."
Yeah.
They told him to Yiddish, so Bunim was afraid to translate it.
Yeah.
So, because it was too strong, they told him, you know, it's a very historic occasion. If you don't do it now, it's only Jews that get killed. So, Baron, though he didn't speak English very well, understood every word. He said, "Dada, nein, das hab ich nicht gesagt. Sag ihm genau, was ich hab gesagt." So he told him, he had no choice, Bunim. Baron told him, do it. Baron had told it to him in yelling and blaze with the eyes blazing. I don't know if you ever saw Baron when he was
I never really saw him.
It would have been impossible not to be afraid of a person. I don't know, people come in and wait this, you can include everybody, and this including myself. You walked into a Baron, you felt afraid.
This is important.
This is a fact. Everybody experiences. You couldn't, as much as he was not in the middle of learning, he was very mild and very low key and so on. But you felt a tremendous aura.
Yeah.
And just the fear that was, from his persona, from his fears, knowing who he was. He just, you felt afraid. And it was a fear that he was going to hurt you. I mean, he couldn't hurt a fly. He was too small, physically. I mean, it was not that he could, he had 6 foot two guys that could pick him up and throw him 60 feet, like, got shown. I don't mean to say they would throw him. I'm saying what I bring out is that it was just a year of who he was and what he was.
Was it the knowledge of who he was, or knowing?
Yeah, it was instinctive.
Yeah, right.
And this is including Tamim, who was there for new for years, you know, and we're completely used to him. And still, it was one on one. You just couldn't. You had that fear.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Very good.
That was. This is something that everybody that was the top ever experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very common by Gedolim to feel that. That's a similar to God. That it feels the fear. The Shama feels the.
It's beyond what the flesh can.
Right, 100%. So Meister, he told him, and so he told Mongstar, he translated English word for word what the Baron said.
Mm-hmm.
And Mongstar was taken aback and didn't say a word. He put his head down the desk for a full 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Thought. Then he said, I'm a Jew, and I'm always going to be a Jew, and I'm going to do it for you. You'll have your, you'll have the permit in this afternoon.
So he had it.
That was about it. The secular establishment, of course, was, you know, we're all didn't give a damn about anybody. All they wanted was Palestine and Israel, and they had meetings, they sang a tikvah and all that, but they didn't do anything to save Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking, and when they wanted, they were able to get a meeting with President Roosevelt, so they wanted to, in the beginning, they had the Bala Toz basically working to get as many Rabbonim out, as many Talmid Chacham out, before they realized the full extent of the what was going on in Germany, in Europe. So so they came, they wanted 2,500 visas over and above the quota. So that's what they wouldn't have to trade off one Jew against another. They would get the Rabbonim out, and as many Yidus would come in, the quota would come in. Whatever number of thousand it was. Then the head of the Reform Jews said, "Oh, President, it's just a bunch of indigent rabbis." Of course, they killed it. You know, they had some scholars and professors and, you know, people with of intellect. He wouldn't lie. Just, you know, big deal. Just a bunch of indigent rabbis. So of course, all they have to hear is that a bunch of schnorrers are coming.
But London.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's of course.
Very good. Okay. Thank you very much. What?
The thing about it, the main thing about it, of course, was his drive. I mean, the tremendous ability to do so many different things at the same time. To be Rosh Hashiva, to be the head of first Vatat Tzal, the head of Chedech Hatzmoy, to be involved in everything and anything had to do with Klal Yisrael. He was in front, leading, and there was a clear vision and a clear understanding of the right answers to every situation, to know exactly what had to be done. To have the energy and the ability to see through to the, you know, to the end.
Yeah, and what do we see today from what he did?
You see terror in America, that's what you see.
Right.
And in Israel.
Right. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you one story that you may have not heard of. At the Levaya, Rabbi Yaakov, my Rabbi, spoke, and he said, Rabbi Yaakov was, I think he was a little bit older than him, had befriended him because he was a Yosef already at that point, Aaron, and they were both in Slobodka.
Weren't they from the same town?
I don't think so, no. Rabbi Yaakov was from a different town. It wasn't Sisowitz. Aaron's father was a Rav in Sicily. But I think they first met in Slobodka.
Because there was a Meister from when they were friends and when they were children.
That's it, because Rav Aaron was a Vince Bocher, and Rav Yaakov was a year or two older.
No, there's a Meister that his mother asked him.
Who is he?
So, right.
Told who he was. He said, why? He told me they had the Shekhinah root of him.
Yeah, but that was which town?
Huh?
Which town was that? Was that in Slobodka?
He took him home. No, he took him home with him.
Oh, he took him home. Oh, because I got an impression that he was much younger than that.
No.
How old was he then?
Bar Mitzvah Bocher, 14.
Okay.
Now, that's from the way I remember the story from Rabbi Yaakov. I mean, I think they came from the same town at all. He was the youngest competent in Slobodka. He was brilliant as can be, so he had no problem keeping up with the old Talmidim. But that's why he was there with the Yaakov. But or maybe the different Shiva. I can't swear that it was in Slobodka. Whichever way it was, the Yaakov took him to his house, and his mother took one look at him, and when he stepped out for a minute, she asked the Yaakov, "Who is that bocher?"
Yeah.
You got Aaron from a dog. Name. Where's he from? Let's say it's wine. Is that the Chzeh the Shekhin Buddha from the Shekhin of that? My take on that was, It's not just the average Jewish lady that could do the kind of woman that has Rabbi Yaakov for a son, because he's in the barn as a kid also.
Yeah, but it was something that was evident, that anybody saw
it. People had the eyes to see the kind of woman that could be zeichet to have Rabbi Yaakov for a son would be the kind of woman that could see and below the little kid, the little physically little person that he was, and to see him in the future God.
But when you saw him later on, you saw that too.
At that point, I saw him as the God of Ador. I mean, he'd heard about him. He'd come to Lake. When I was in RJ in high school, he came to visit RJJ. He came there every year at least once to visit.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Some of his time being in Rosh Hashiva was there. The Rosh Hashiva of RJJ, Mendel Kravitz, was his Talmud. And he would come and he would give a shiur in Beis Medrash. So everybody would come, even the high school kids who didn't understand a word of what he thought about. Plus, he spoke Yiddish very quickly. He spoke Yiddish and he spoke it very quickly. Yeah. And the content, the depth was far beyond the high school kids.
But you still, know. You saw some kind of.
Well, I always saw it, but I didn't always see him. So I saw a little Jew that was saying, you know, they're speaking Chinese, I mean.
Yeah.
I just saw how the Rashid all sat there, you know, with their hands to the ears and listening intently.
Mm.
And did nothing miss a word. And
that's himself was an impression.
That's an impression, but it didn't mean anything to me. And, you know, at that point, I was a kid. I was a 14-year-old kid, 15-year-old kid.
Uh-huh.
He came. I don't know, it was a couple of times that he came. That I remember, but had nothing to do. We had no. We had cars in Hanishak.
You couldn't evaluate it.
No, we couldn't. Then we had no sense. We just.
But there was an impression, though.
That's right. That we didn't know who he was. And in high school at that point, I don't think any of us really appreciated what we were seeing. As we got older, of course, we heard more about him, and we began to...
Because I heard from some people, a certain person, who said he even brought a friar guy from Lakewood, the owner from the hotel, the big one, the Laurel in the Pines, to see him, and he was like mesmerized. By looking at it, just looking, he didn't know what he was saying.
Was it Goy or Yid?
A Yid. But he was not learned in any way.
It doesn't have to be learned. Everybody was impressed with Rabbi Aaron's personality was just incredible. That's what
he didn't even necessarily understand what he was talking about. He just said, looked at him, he said, this is a great person.
You know, the godless was evident to anybody who met him. That's why he had the impression he made on the people that he met.
Yeah.
Because of his dynamism and his clarity of thought. And
He said he could see it in his eyes.
Yeah.
The blue eyes.
That wasn't the color. It was special. You know,
the glow.
Yeah, the fire. You know, the man was when he said sheer, he was better. He got very. His excitement was the atmosphere was always. He never said it quietly. Always at the beginning he started quietly, and then he got caught up with the give and take of the steps. He became. Different person.
Okay, so that's your impression. Thank you very much. And
I mean, I remember I don't remember if I actually heard him say it or heard him afterwards. The famous night when the Mizrahi started up with him in terms of he.
I don't know what happened there. I don't know what happened.
With Maiman, the head of the Mizrahi.
Yeah. Oh, with the Biskarov.
Right. His what do you call it? We went to. I think we were out in Torres at that point, and they shut us down to listen to.
On the east side.
To the east side, right? They made it. He gave a classic speech on the godless of the Biskarov.
Uh-huh.
And, I remember that was that was him in full form. I mean, he was.
Uh-huh.
He tracked the whole history of Smicha.
Yeah.
And there was an attempt to make, you know, to reinstitute Smicha and the time of the base basis. And Gideon said it wasn't a good time. That was 500 years ago. And he said, then it doesn't work for sure. Now you can't do it.
So he wanted to have a Sanhedrin or something?
Yeah, well, he wanted to reinstitute the Sanhedrin exactly from a central authority by Israel, but it would be in the hands of the Israeli rabbanut. I mean, you can imagine how much. And the Biskarov as the leading government in Israel, of course, is vehemently opposed. And he, but so the Mavai, so they basically said, they basically, you know, ignored the Skarov and they Mavaza him. So Baron and the other Gedolim were up and, you know, issued a very strong condemnation and Mecha against them.
So you were actually at that Mecha?
Yep.
You remember that scene?
Well, we just, it was in Shuli speaking, and I remember this is Rosh, and we kept, we'll have it, we've heard the tapes all over again.
Because I know about the tapes.
Yeah, the tapes are...
I heard the tapes.
That tape is very good.
Yeah, I know it's very good, but...
That's a very clear one, but a lot of them are not clear.
Mm-hmm.
That one came out very good.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
I know.
He destroyed the whole position completely. I mean, they showed they were so bizarre in the foundation, and it only lead to more problems, and it's not the way the Kali Shor never operated.
Was there any fallout because of that speech?
No. The main thing was that first of all, it never really got it did serve the opposition of the Briskerov and Elie Gedolim to it. It exists today. I mean, they have it, but it doesn't have.
No, I mean the effect, the after effect of that speech.
What could you do? I mean, it was. It didn't change anything.
But they never made a Sanhedrin either.
No, they didn't call that. They just simply made a regular administrative thing for the Rabbanim, which is fine.
Yeah.
They never called it what they wanted to call it. That was the point.
Uh-huh. So he stopped it.
No, Bishrav stopped it, and he followed up on it.
Yeah. Okay.
Because they realized that they had gone through that. We can't just ignore the Gedolim and.
Yeah.
That was it.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah, but he was a gift of the devotion to Klal
Yisrael. That's true. I mean, that's why I'm doing this.
I think that's why I'm doing him in Klal Yisrael, but his gabbat wasn't, his gift wasn't in so much in his gabbat in learning as the gabbat in studying Klal Yisrael. And putting together the kind of yeshiva that exists in Europe, and they could produce Talmidim who would have been chashuv in Europe as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was a gift to know the yeshiva, and the world is like that today.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely brisk.
Mm-hmm.
And even Panovich and Amir. The Panovich and Amir do it because they have the sheer numbers, so they can, by virtue of the numbers. Okay.
The intensity.
But to set up a yeshiva in America, which like late was, and to produce the kind of people they produced, only he could do.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And Rebellion, or Shmuel, or Schneidman, I mean, rivals. Mm-hmm. These are all big guns, these guys. These would have been, would have made a mark in Europe before the war as well.
Mm-hmm.
These are big guys. Marshall Hirsch and Sprotkin.
Who?
Hirsch. Five months. Of course, not doing well in Schneidman and Eli Otzon. I mean,
also, by Mayor Hirschkowitz.
Hirschkowitz, I think the whole Kagan in Denver is a great terrorist. These are real Shivas, like, real Tamina. People, he did a Chaim Epstein. Chaim Epstein is a Stern and White Coast. These are great dimensions. That's a little guy. These have begun in the 20s in Lakewood, really.
That's right.
And they haven't stopped learning since.
That's right. Okay. Thank you very much for your help.